I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, we wrap up our series of San Antonio municipal runoff candidate debates with a focus on District 9. We are unable to follow the format that we've employed for the past candidate debates because one participant has declined our invitation, so we will not be hearing from Misty Spears. But Angie Taylor Aramburu is here for the full hour. She will explain her vision for San Antonio in District 9, and she will answer your questions. Early voting for the runoff election is now underway. It's going to last until June 3rd. The runoff election is Saturday, June 7th. If you didn't vote in the May election, you can still vote in the runoff, and your vote is necessary. This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio's District 9 encompasses the city's far north side, including areas like Stone Oak and Encino Park. It is considered one of the city's most conservative districts. The seat is now open due to term limits preventing Councilman John Courage from seeking re-election. And now we have a runoff election to see who will be the next representative for District 9. Misty Spears was the top vote getter in the May election, but about 400 votes behind her was Angie Taylor Aramburu. And so TPR's The Source has been highlighting the runoff races with candidate debates. But this time, one candidate is declining to join us. TPR made multiple overtures to Misty Spears. We tried to address her concerns when she said she thought there was a lack of fairness and she had a distrust of the media, and she still decided not to participate. She's still invited to participate. Misty Spears is welcome to call in anytime during the hour and talk about her vision for San Antonio and District 9. But we do have Angie Taylor Aramburu with us, and she is here, and she will take your questions. You can call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And Angie, welcome to The Source. It's great to have you.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. I appreciate you having me today.
So introduce yourself to our listeners.
Sure. Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. I am very grateful to be here today. I think it's important as a candidate to take every opportunity to answer questions from the community and to let you know who I am. So I'll give you a little bit of background. I am a first-generation college graduate. I attended Purdue University. I was pretty ambitious. I had two majors, and I spent a year studying abroad in England at Lancaster University. I started my career in public relations and then decided to focus my career a little bit, and I got my master's degree in nonprofit arts management, which took me to New York and my dream job. I managed theaters on Broadway and off-Broadway, managing multi-million-dollar budgets, and it was very exciting. I also worked as a consultant doing feasibility studies and economic impact studies for performing arts facilities across North America. And then I had kids, and like many people, you tend to shift gears at that point, and that's what I did. So I started a small fitness company doing classes for people and their dogs, and it quickly gained national attention. It was featured in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, on the Today Show, and my company grew. And then my husband and I and our three kids decided that we wanted to settle and raise our family in his hometown of San Antonio. It's beautiful. We love it. It was a lot more affordable, and we are so happy to be here. And we've been here about 10 years, and it's been nice living near family again. And once we moved here, I wanted to get involved right away. I think it's really important to give back to the community. So I got involved with PTA. I was president within the first couple of years, and I've served on that for the last 10 years. I was I've been part of leadership, NEISD. I've served as an appointee on the efficiency committee. I'm very passionate about our public schools and supporting our public schools and want to find ways the city council can support those. I've served on the mayor's fitness council for 8 years, working closely with Metro Health and about 200 other organizations throughout the city to promote health and wellness. And I've also served on other community boards. So I share this because I go all in. I think it's important to share your experience and skills with the community and to give back. And that's why I'm running for city council. I want to use those skills and experience to give back to the community. And I think it's important that leaders at this level have demonstrated the willingness and ability to put in the work to create the kind of community we want to see.
All right. So interesting background. But what really inspired you? So, I should run for a city council. I should represent District 9.
Well, I'm always looking for ways that I can give back to the community with the skills and the experience that I have. And it did pique my interest as a way to give back to the community. I can say I wasn't initially sold on it, so I met with Councilman Courage to see what the job entailed. I even sat in with him on open office hours to confirm for myself that this is a job I wanted to do. I interviewed constituents as they were waiting to meet with him, and they talked to me about things like drainage issues that affected how their grandkids could use or not use their backyard, and ways that different infrastructure issues affected their lives. And so although I'm not maybe passionate about infrastructure, I am passionate about how it affects the quality of life for our residents. And I think that is something I can use my skills and experience to lead on and help solve those problems in the community.
Well, our phone lines are open. If you have a question for the candidate running for District 9. We have two candidates running for District 9. I don't want to try and, dampen that fact. Missy Spears is not with us. She declined our invitation to join us for our debate, but Angie Taylor Aramburu is with us today. And so you can call in with your question, 833-877-8255. Let's go to Rachel. And Rachel, hi, you're on the air.
Thank you. Hi, Angie. As you noted, you have provided leadership in the Mayor's Fitness Council during a time when it has really expanded just from being about physical competitions and events to really having a lot more holistic approach to include mental health, nutrition, and all of these things that make for a healthy community. I'm wondering, could you speak to how you would take those skills and address it moving forward, continuing some of the good work Councilman Courage did, what you would do different, but specifically to use those skills to get better representation for your residents who have disabilities who have been so neglected, and particularly the many deaf residents in District 9 who really have some of the worst employment opportunities of anyone in San Antonio. Thank you.
All right, Rachel, thank you for the call. And Angie.
Rachel, thank you for that question. I appreciate that. I am very proud of the work we've done on the Mayor's Fitness Council. And the three pillars are physical activity, food and nutrition, and mental health. And I actually just met someone at an event yesterday who brought up a lot of issues for people with disabilities and the accessibility issues in San Antonio. And I think it's something we certainly need to address. And in my previous career in public relations, I actually worked with the Governor's Council for People with Disabilities for several years. And so I am aware of a lot of those issues with SSI, SSDI, the waivers, and just general everyday issues that people with disabilities face. And I do want to prioritize that. And for example, the conversation we had yesterday was, when a business wants to open, there are certain boxes that need to be checked by the city before they're allowed to open. But one of them is not ADA compliance. And that's a federal requirement. So I'm not sure why our city isn't looking at that as a requirement for our businesses, because it's critical that our entire community can access the community amenities and our businesses. So that is something I want to prioritize, and I look forward to hearing more from you and other people in that community on ways we can dive in and help.
Some people might see talking about disabilities as a niche issue, although it is a fairness issue. But the way I look at it, and tell me if you see it this way as well, but it seems like if you get this right, then you get so many other things right as well. If you're, if you decide there are parts of the community that we can leave behind, don't have to include, then a lot of people start falling off the table as well. So do you see it as an important factor in deciding, you know, we are here for everyone?
Absolutely. We can't leave anyone in our community behind. I think that's critical. And when we're looking at people with disabilities, we have a large veteran community, a large military community. We have an aging community. And you never know when you're going to break your leg, right? And that shouldn't mean you don't have access to your favorite restaurant or your favorite store, or that you can't take the sidewalk because there aren't appropriate easements on there. So it's absolutely something we have to look at, accessibility for everyone, for everyone.
All right. Another question from our listeners, and the number to call in is 833-877-8255. Let's go to Tracy. And Tracy, you're on the air.
Hi. Hi, Angie. I just have a question. I've heard and seen a lot about Misty's financial issues, and in this day and age, I really feel like transparency and honesty
Hang on a second. Tracy, thank you for calling. We're not going to talk about Misty. She's not, Misty Spears is not here. She decided not to come on the air. So we're not really going to be using this hour to try to make her look bad or talk about her. She's not here to defend herself. So we're going to spend the time with Angie talking about her vision for San Antonio and for District 9. So it seems like, Tracy, your question is about transparency and being able to communicate well with the public. And so I'm just going to go to Angie Taylor Aramburu to talk about what's your, you know, pledge for transparency.
Transparency in City Hall is non-negotiable. We oversee taxpayer dollars, and so taxpayers need to know what's going on. They need to know how contracts are being awarded. They need to know who's getting those contracts. So I'm committed to pushing for clear public processes when it comes to awarding those contracts, eliminating backroom deals, making sure every decision is made out in the open with accountability to the community.
Right. So before we went on air, we were talking about now these are 4-year terms and how important that is. We voters don't get another shot at, you know, being able to grade these offices, whether it be mayor or city council, for another 4 years. And so they don't have that much accountability as we've had in the past. What does that mean to you that this is a 4-year job? And how do we make sure that we're able to have accountability with these elected offices now?
Absolutely. I see that concern. And that's why it's so important to get it right. The ballot box right now. I hope that by showing up, I'm showing you who I am. And 4 years is a long time. And I'm somebody that respects feedback. And so as a council person, I would like to do an annual survey of my constituents to say, how am I doing? You know, what do you like that I'm doing? What can I do better? And I'll respond to that because I think that's important, especially in this position. We are here to represent the community, and I want to make sure I'm doing that up to their standards.
Now, it seems like the vote now counts twice as much because it's not just for 2 years, it's for 4 years.
It's for 4 years, and there's not as many people voting. So I tell everyone, your vote counts.
Yeah,
for
you don't
a
want
lot.
Someone else deciding for you what the future of San Antonio will be. So you have got to get out there and vote, because you won't have another chance to vote in a municipal election for another 4 years. Certainly, you can find time to do it once every 4 years to decide who's going to, you know, lead San Antonio. Let's go to Robert. And Robert, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Thanks, Dave. And Angie, I appreciate your stance on ADA compliance as a web designer. That's important as well. So I guess I'll phrase this as, what are your views on bonds? I know that, quote, some people, or I don't know, your opponent maybe says we don't need bonds. I would like to know, you know, there's been a lot of things done in District 9, especially by Courage, getting the senior center and the park that I think comes from bond money. So what are your views on bonds?
All right. So it was a little garbled. He's asking about bonds. The city of San Antonio uses bonds. All cities use bonds for major infrastructure projects. If you don't have bonds, basically you're just not really going to have a lot of activity, a lot of growth, a lot of being able to deal with the growth issues that we're having in San Antonio. So Angie Taylor, Aramburu, what are your views on bonds?
They're important. I certainly don't see them as just another debt. I mean, that is how we get our critical infrastructure taken care of. We can't afford to pay for these big road projects and all of these other things, big park projects through the general fund. We need those bonds to take care of our community for now and into the future. So he mentioned a couple of things in District 9 where the bond was critical. Our Walker Ranch Senior Center, which has been very popular in our community and very necessary. The Klassen Steubing Ranch, which is the newest park in our community, and it's packed every single weekend. And we did a McAllister Park expansion with walking trails, bike paths. So it provides the necessary funds that we need to take care of our community, especially as we're looking at the growth expectations in our community. We can't just look at what we need right now. We have to look 10, 20 years in the future and make sure our infrastructure is keeping up with growth.
So San Antonio has a AAA bond rating, which is the highest it can be. And they're talking about downgrading the United States bond rating, which is AAA, but they want to downgrade it because of the debt issues with this big, beautiful bill that's going through Congress now. But, you know, so San Antonio has a deal when it comes to borrowing money for bonds. But when you think about it, if you're going to, everyone who buys a car has to pay cash up front or buy a house or start a business, and you can't borrow money to do those things. How quickly would that, you know, seize up economic development? So bonds are just part of how you run a city.
Precisely. Yes, it's a necessary part of our funding mechanism that we have to use. And we do have a AAA rating. And if that gets decreased, we'll be able to borrow less money. And
be
that
more
would
expensive.
Be unfortunate. It would be more expensive to borrow that money. It's still necessary. We don't want to raise taxes to the point that we're paying for this out of the general fund. I don't think anybody would want that.
And if there was a problem with bond borrowing, then there wouldn't be a AAA rating.
Yes.
All right, let's go to the next caller. Let's go to Vicki. Hi, Vicki. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. My name's Vicki Stearman. I'm an advocate in this city for animal welfare, and I work with ACS, and I've talked to many city council people along the years. And my question is this. The problem we have with Ray and Rome dogs is pervasive in this city. District 9 might have a lesser, might feel like they have a lesser issue, but it is a big issue. And I'd like to know how you aim to support ACS and what you aim to do to try to curtail this issue, you know, curtail this problem. And the other thing I'd like to say is, in all the city surveys since 2017, this issue has been number three for the voters for the budget survey.
All right. Vicki, thank you for that. So it was garbled. I don't know what's happening with our cell phones, but it is vicious dogs, wild dogs. It is a problem throughout the city of San Antonio, and the voters have said they want this addressed. So what are your views on that?
Yeah, thanks, Vicki, for bringing this up. It is a very important issue, and it really affects our public safety in a lot of parts of town. You're right. In District 9, it's not as big of an issue, but it is a citywide issue that affects all of us. And I've met with many animal advocates about this. I myself am an animal advocate. I have a business working with dogs. I've partnered with the Humane Society. We are known as one of the worst cities for animals. And I think our goal is to be a no-kill city. We need to get there faster. We just opened two new centers for spay-neuter on the east and west sides. But I think we need to make it even more accessible with mobile units, being more active. We need to increase capacity at ACS and make it more humane. We need better conditions for those dogs. We need to incentivize fostering. We need to incentivize getting your pets spay-neutered. And I think we need to crack down on illegal backyard breeding because we simply have too many unwanted animals. We also have an issue of people just allowing their animals to roam, and we certainly need to disincentivize that. And that's going to take a couple of different measures. I think education. We just increased the fee surrounding that, and I hope that helps. I think we need to provide assistance to those to fix their fences to help keep their dogs in, if that might be the issue. And then we just need to work with ACS to have policies that make more sense. I think they euthanize animals, from what I understand, on Saturdays at 11 a.m. That seems like a perfect opportunity for an adoption event to me. That's when people are off work and can actually go down there and adopt those animals. And I think a public education campaign would be very helpful, particularly in the schools, because anyone with children knows they can sometimes be the best teachers for their families and affecting that culture of animal care and welfare.
So a lot of people are talking about public safety in this election, and they're using that as a buzzword to say, I'm pro public safety, but they don't tell you what that really means. Animal attacks, that's a public safety issue.
Absolutely.
I should be able to, you know, run on my running route through the streets of my neighborhood and not worry about being mauled by a dog. So that's a public safety issue.
Absolutely, yes. And as somebody who used to run a lot, I have been attacked by a dog while I was running. And so you should feel safe. And when I run on trails, I carry, you know, pepper spray with me, not for people, but for animals. And it shouldn't be something we have to worry about. So we need to first and foremost make sure our community is safe from animals that may attack you. But then we also need to, in turn, care for these animals that are roaming and don't have homes. So it's a big problem, but I think we need to prioritize it. Like she said, it comes up number three on the survey. So it is something that people think about and care about and want something done about.
Our next caller, Patty. And Patty, hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Angie.
Hi, how are you?
Hi. My question is, many of the other council members have other jobs, and I was wondering, are you going to have a second job, or will you be a full-time council member?
All right, Patty, thank you for that question. We raised council's salary, thinking that this would end that situation, but I guess that's continuing. So are you able to say this is going to be your full-time, number one, 100%, 24/7 focus, Angie?
Absolutely. And if my campaign is any indication, yes, it will be. That's what my full focus has been this past year as well. So I've already suspended my business during the campaign so I could focus full time on this. And I will be a full time council person. And that's what I think this job requires to do it well. I think you have to do it full time. You have to be available nights and weekends when your community is gathering so you can meet with them, hear from them, and, you know what's going on.
Yeah, like town hall meetings. We have neighborhood association events. Night out things, all
exactly,
sorts of opportunities to, you know, just talk to people. So that's going to be, is that your plan?
That's my plan. And that's what I've been doing. I have attended countless HOA and community meetings over the past year. And I would like to point out, I was the first one to throw my hat in the ring for this position before the term limit was increased, before the pay was increased. This is something I want to do and I'm passionate about. And I look forward to doing it full time.
We're having a conversation with District 9 runoff candidate Angie Taylor Aramburu. She has an opponent. That would be Misty Spears. We have invited Misty Spears to join us. We made many calls and emails trying to invite her to come on the air and participate in our on-air conversation. She declined to join us, but we're not going to cancel this opportunity to talk to Angie Taylor Aramburu because we're not here to play. We're gonna do this. And if you don't want to come on, you don't want to come on. That's great. If you want to call in, Misty Spears, if you're listening, we'd love to hear from you. The number is 833-877-8255. Early voting is now underway. It's going to last until June 3rd. Election day for the runoff is June 7th. If you did not vote in the May election, you can still vote in the runoff election, and your vote is necessary. Let's go to the next caller, and we have Martha. Hi, Martha. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I think one of the most innovative things that John Kurtz did was introduce participatory budgeting. And what that is giving people in the district a chance to say what they think would improve the district for everybody. And then they go through a process of understanding how it might fit into the budget. Then finally, there's a district vote among the participants about what projects that the people in the district have introduced would be most worthwhile to improve the community. I appreciated that because, you know, more and more we feel kind of distant from politicians and officials. And this, I thought, was very engaging in addition to improving the community. And I'm wondering if you're going to continue something like that.
All right, Martha, thank you for that call. And participatory budgeting, are you going to continue that?
Absolutely. I love this program because it's a way that our community can come up with projects and we vote on it as a community and prioritize keeping our tax dollars in our community. And we can create things that improve our quality of life right here that might not make it into the city budget. A couple of things that we've done through participatory budget are Blossom Park walking trail. We've added a couple turn lanes in Stone Oak where they were necessary and it didn't make it into the regular budget. And we put, you know, plumbed restrooms in parks. So when people say we want this in our community, we can make it happen. A few things I might do that, some feedback I've received is some people are like, oh, that sounds great. I haven't heard of it. I haven't received that survey to vote on it. So I want to make sure more people in our community know about it and can participate in it. So perhaps treating it like a campaign, canvassing, having a place where they can come and vote on it, sending ballots out to make sure everyone is involved in this process because it's exciting. We can get great things done in our community. And, you know, it's community focused and that's what we're all about.
There's been a lot of, I think, just criticism about how this municipal election has become hyper-partisan. We see that in a lot of the races. And some people are wondering about this race in District 9. You have been a candidate running under the Democratic banner for State House, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And your opponent, who's not with us today, Misty Spears, she has been described as a Republican activist. So we have that element here. A lot of people don't want city politics to be torn apart by partisan politics because it's negative. It just becomes, you know, just sniping and it's just not really beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
So are you going to, like, not be part? How are you going to deal with that partisan element?
Well, I've been dealing with it. I'm very concerned about how partisan this election has become. I don't think it serves our residents. I think the city hall races are nonpartisan on purpose because we're here to manage tax dollars. We're here to do infrastructure. There's no red or blue way to fill a pothole, right? We just need someone willing to listen to the problem and solve it. And I want to make sure that's what I've done. And I can say I'm the only candidate endorsed by people on both sides of the political aisle. And I've done that purposefully because I think it's important that We are willing to work with anyone. We are willing to listen to anyone. We are listening to call anyone back, regardless of their political affiliation. I mean, a good idea is a good idea, right? Wherever it comes from. And the opposite is also true. So I'm willing to work with anyone. I've demonstrated that I can work with anyone. And I look forward to doing that.
Some people see the city council's reproductive justice fund that was set up and has gone into courts and has been a political issue. They saw that as partisan politics getting into City Hall. What was your position on support for the reproductive justice fund? And do you see that as partisan politics?
Yes. And I can say, regardless of my view on the issue, I don't agree with that simply because it went against state law. As expected, it garnered some lawsuits, and we ended up spending, you know, four times as much money fighting lawsuits as putting in money to the problem we were trying to solve. And that just doesn't make sense. I think there, if you want to affect, reducing the number of abortions, providing access, there are other better ways to spend that money. And we shouldn't be going against state law and drawing lawsuits that just in the end waste our money on lawyers instead of providing services to our constituents.
Right. And so the Reproductive Justice Fund was about more than just providing funds for women to go out of state to get necessary abortion care. But there's other things that needed to be done. We know that we have a lack of understanding in the young community about the consequences of early sex and all these. They don't understand about pregnancies, and they're not getting that information elsewhere. There's a lack that can be done using city dollars. They're not tax dollars. These came from the CPS surplus revenue to lessen the impact of the abortion ban in Texas without spending money to send young women to other states.
So you are absolutely right. And I would like to see the money spent on healthcare and education. We have the highest rate of teenage pregnancies in the country in our county, and that is something we have to address. So I would love to see the money going toward organizations that provide education, prevention, and healthcare.
All right, let's go to the next caller, Henrietta. Henrietta, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, sir, and I liked all her comments. But one thing I wanted to say is when we have bond money and it's for construction, the city of San Antonio is too soft on construction. They don't have enough inspectors, and the inspectors don't have the knowledge of what they're doing. So I run into a lot of these problems because I myself like to do construction inspections. But the thing is that the city needs to keep redoing all this work over and over because they don't follow up correctly on is it right, and they cut a lot of corners. So they do a lot of shortcuts when it comes to constructions, and that's where the problem is. They spend too much money, and then they have to do it over and over again. And it's not right because they don't ask them to give them at least over a year in guarantees that it's going to work. And if it doesn't, go and fix it. It's awful. Yes.
Henrietta, thank you so much for the call. So we've heard a lot about public works, people frustrated, I think rightly so, with the nonstop construction in some parts of San Antonio. And I'm sure you've got stuff going on in District 9. Mm-hmm. People want to see some accountability and effectiveness from public works. And if you don't do this, you're never going to pass another public bond because people want to know. We don't want to go through this again.
Yeah, no, there has to be accountability, transparency. There needs to be more cooperation between all of the entities involved with SAWS, CPS, the construction companies, so that we can prevent having to redo the work. We need to make sure at every step it's being done correctly so we don't have to redo the work. We need to take the businesses into account that live alongside that construction and work with their schedules when we're planning it so we're not disrupting their busy seasons. So we're you know, they're not going to go out of business because we're fixing the road in front of their business. We need to incorporate them into the conversation and into the planning.
We did get a voicemail for a voicemail question for Angie Taylor Aramburu, who is in the studio today to take your questions. Let's give a listen.
Hi, my name is Jean, and I'm a 35-year resident of the northeast part of San Antonio. We have a growing problem with the deer population that has gone unchecked for years and years. I tried to get help with it a few years ago with our council representatives and was told, well, if the residents will pay for a study, a population study, the city will look into it, which is no help at all. We have deer that are injured. Some are diseased. I almost have the Texas Wildlife number on my speed dial because of problems we've had with the deer. The male deer become aggressive during rutting season. Just this past week, we had triplets born on our front lawn, and as adorable as they are, it's extremely dangerous conditions for them with all the cars speeding. They've eaten everything they can eat. We have no flowers around here because the deer eat them all. It's just a horrible mess. We got baby deer out of the gutters and put them up on lawns after they're born. People pay no attention to, please slow down, it's fawn season. And as long as this population goes unchecked and continues to, it continues to increase because they have no predators. I'd like to know what the candidates are going to propose to do about it. It's sort of, if you don't live here, it's not a problem. You don't know anything about it. Well, I do live here and I do pay taxes, and it's a huge problem. And I'm very disappointed the other candidate is not there to give her response to it. Thank you.
All right. So, Angie Taylor Aramburu, what can we do about the deer population, overpopulation?
Yeah, and this is something, this isn't the first time I've heard this. I've heard this from many people in our community, and it is a safety issue. For traffic, because having a lot of deer isn't good for traffic, but there's also an overpopulation issue, and I think there is a deer waste disease going around.
Yeah, chronic wasting
disease, and so these deer are not in good health, and it's not a good situation, and not every neighborhood can afford to do a study or to take care of the issue themselves.
I'll do a study for them right now. There's too many deer.
There's too many deer, and we need to do something about it. And, you know, I saw this article, and in New York City, I know they were putting out birth control pellets to control the rat population, and not being an animal expert at all, I think that might be something we could possibly look into to control the deer population. That said, I would talk to the experts that know more about it, but I do think we need to look into that as a city because it does affect a large portion of our community. We have some more wooded rural areas where deer are prevalent.
Well, there are a lot of people who think, you know, don't want to city, other cities have hired trappers to come in and mm-hmm. relocate the deer, but you really can't relocate them because they get injured in the process, or they will hire somebody and they will come and trap them and they will, you know, harvest the deer and use their venison for, mm-hmm. you know, not for human consumption, but for out there. So there are solutions. It's just a matter of, like, there are people who feel very kind of happy, wappy, squishy about doing something about this problem.
Yeah, but I think the bottom line is it is a problem. It's a big enough problem that you're calling in today and that I've heard about it before. So as your representative, I would certainly look into it and try and solve that problem for you.
It can be solved with leadership. Let's go to Charles. And Charles, you're on the air.
Just to piggyback on what you said, chronic wasting disease, thank you for mentioning that. It's underpublicized, and if that crosses over to horses or cattle, eventually it might mutate. Then people will pay attention. But the question I have, just cite for me briefly, you know, three big things at the end of your term in the future, hopefully many years in the future, that you could say, well, I was able to achieve these three big goals that I had. And just tell us what those are and you know, how you hope to achieve them. Thank you.
All right, Charles, thank you for that. For 4 years, if you get elected, and of course it's up in the air, it's between you and Misty Spears. If you get elected, Angie Taylor Aramburu, what would you be able to look back on and say, I did that?
Thank you for that very small question. No, I appreciate that question. You know, what we hear all the time, and he said, you know, it can be construed many different ways, but making sure people feel safe in our neighborhoods. And in District 9, we're fortunate. We don't have a lot of violent crime. So one, I want to make sure that continues. But what we see are a lot of property crimes, cars getting broken into over and over, mailboxes getting broken into over and over, speeding through our neighborhoods, which endangers all of us, especially our children. So I want to find creative solutions to those problems. Again, working with the experts who know better than I do, but to, you know, as your leader, put a focus on it, talk to them, and figure out how to solve those problems. I would, you know, if at the end of my term there are no mailbox break-ins, I would consider myself successful. I also want to make sure that, and this, you know, as much as we can control, keeping costs down. You know, we want to make sure seniors can stay in their home. We have the aging in place program, so their property taxes don't increase. They can stay in their homes. Make sure veterans have access to, you know, affordable housing. Make sure that people that want to live in our community can live in our community, and they're not priced out. So we own CPS, we own SAWS, we need to keep those costs down. So I want to make sure people aren't getting priced out at the end of those 4 years. And then a vision I have for District 9, and something I've heard over and over again, is that people want to feel more connected in our community. And so if I can do that, I will be very proud. And a couple of ideas I have for this, the big idea that we will have to figure out is some type of a community center in District 9 that would serve our small businesses, our nonprofits, our community groups that need a place to meet but can't necessarily afford to pay for food at a restaurant or something, to simply have an HOA meeting. You know, and maybe we can incorporate those small businesses to activate the space. Maybe we could have a community pool, because not all neighborhoods have pools, but a place for the community to gather, to meet one another where you might not meet in other situations, because I think that builds a stronger community. And until we can get to that facility, I'd like to have things like a 4th of July parade, you know, on the north side. We don't have anything like that. I think it's important for our community to come together and gather and get to know one another, because what I've heard is in our beautiful little neighborhoods, a lot of them gated, we can sometimes feel isolated in our communities. And so providing those opportunities for connectivity, I think, are so important for socialization, for our mental health, and just for feeling more comfortable in improving our quality of life in our community.
So in District 9, you have some key corridors, Blanco, Huebner, Bitters, and they have a lot of congestion. Everyone kind of knows what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
So what can be done about that?
Should we call TxDOT?
Well, you know, these are city streets.
I know.
And we need to be knocking on TxDOT's door.
No, we can handle it. We need to look at traffic mitigation strategies. I think there are different types of intersections we can incorporate into those streets. As we're seeing at the Blanco 1604 interchange, they're doing an interesting X, which is safer and I think will move traffic quicker once it's complete.
And the state is putting a lot of money into that 1604.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. That is a TxDOT project. But yeah, those intersections, well, first of all, we need to make sure they're safe. And then we need to talk to the experts and see what can we do to make these flow better, to make the intersections work better for traffic, have better timing mechanisms, and, you know, make sure traffic is flowing safely and freely.
And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We would be having a candidate debate, unfortunately. One of the candidates for District 9 decided not to join us, Misty Spears. So we're having to spend an hour with Angie Taylor Aramburu. She is the candidate running for District 9. And the runoff election is on June the 7th. Let's go to Nancy. And Nancy, you're on the air.
Hi, Angie. I think that everybody agrees that the city needs to be financially responsible when allocating taxpayer money. And I'd like to know, what are your views about financial responsibility, both as a hopefully a future city council person, and personally.
All right. So how should the city handle financial responsibility? I should add another wrinkle to that, because the prediction is from the city manager is that we're going to be going into some lean years. So what should be done?
Well, financial responsibility is the cornerstone of what we are here to do, right? We need to make sure we're managing our tax dollars efficiently and effectively. I would advocate, and as soon as we get into office, we're going to be heading into the next budget. There's a lot of talk about having a budget deficit, and we're already seeing the effects of the federal cuts coming down, and I can only anticipate that's going to grow over the next few years. So I can say, in my own experience, as I mentioned, I manage nonprofits. I was managing a multi-million dollar nonprofit during the 2008 financial crisis, where we lost half of our board. We lost half of our income seemingly overnight. And we had to work really hard and make some really tough decisions to keep that organization solvent. And so that's experience, I think, that will lend itself to working on this city budget. So we have to make sure we're taking care of our needs over our wants, just like we do as a family. We have to look at the things that are non-negotiable, make sure those are taken care of in the budget, and we're going to have to make some really hard decisions. I would advocate for a sunset committee to come in and look at existing programs and departments, things that we're spending our money on that might have been necessary 10 years ago when they got added, but might have been solved or resolved at this point, where we can reallocate those funds to our priorities. And I think the most important thing is setting goals as a council, so we have agreed upon goals when we're going into that budget cycle, so we are all on the same page and we're putting our money toward reaching those goals that we all agree on.
Now, the caller, Randall. Hi, Randall. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I need a good morning or good afternoon. Hello. And I need to stress at the outset that I am in eastern Medina County. I am neither a San Antonio resident or voter.
All right.
But I am among the hundreds of residents out here that kind of look at all this expansion and development as perhaps some kind of monster looming on the horizon. Texas in general is facing a water crisis in the years ahead, and the San Antonio Metroplex is at the front of this. Mm-hmm. San Antonio Water Service, or SAWS, I believe, had an agreement to pump from Medina Lake in years past. Medina Lake is now below 5% capacity. Of course, the Edwards Aquifer is now in stage 5 restrictions. A number of smaller municipalities around the state have successfully instituted building and development moratoriums when their area is in drought or when water restrictions are enacted. The city of Heath, Texas is one example of this, and I believe Conroe, Texas, out towards Houston is another. Is this something that you would support for San Antonio? Why should there be this ongoing onslaught of development, new homes, new businesses, car washes on every corner, when we barely have enough water for the people that are already here?
All right, Randall, appreciate that. So I do want to point out the car washes use recirculated water. They capture the water and they filter it and they use it again and again. So to the point, though, we have to strike a balance between development and our water availability. District 9, you are on the recharge zone. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge consideration, a big responsibility.
It is, and it's a top responsibility. And this is a question we get asked often, and thank you for calling in from Medina County to ask it, because it highlights the fact that water affects us all, right? And we all share the same source. And so we have to prioritize protecting it. It's critical. We have the largest portion of the recharge zone in District 9. And there are a lot of rules in place about developing on it. And I think those need to remain in place. And we need to continuously consult with the experts at the aquifer, at the San Antonio River Authority, and all of the people in charge of our water supply. And you're right. If development has to make sense, if it's going to take more water than we have or put us in peril, then that might be something we look into.
We can put restrictions on new development, no green lawns, you know, zero scaping.
And I think that will be something we have to look into. I mean, when you look at the pace of our water disappearing, I think we're going to all have to do something about that. We have one desalination plant. I think we need to invest in more. I think we are looking at one more. But we're going to have to look at alternative ways to get water to our community. And like you said, we have to, you know, look at ways to prevent out using our supply.
So we almost got through the hour without talking about Project Marvel.
Oh, no. Sorry.
But, you know, I have a responsibility. I got to find out where you are on Project Marvel.
Absolutely. So it is an ambitious initiative, and it has significant potential economic impact on our city. And I think it could be the best thing or the worst thing that happens to San Antonio. It depends on the leadership and how we go about doing it. And the most popular part of Project Marvel that people like to talk about are a new Spurs arena. But it's important to point out that it incorporates a lot of different things. It's the expansion and renovation of our convention center, which I think is really necessary to compete with neighboring cities to continue bringing in those conventions and those tourism and hotel dollars. It's a new hotel. It's renovating the federal building, turning it into a performance space. It's a land bridge across the highway into over to the Alamo Dome.
Right, uniting the east side with the downtown.
Yes, precisely. And the Alamo Dome was a part of it. I'm not sure if it still is now. Things kind
of
change overnight on that
one.
And it's important to point out that there are different funding mechanisms being proposed for each of these different projects. I think they each need to be looked at individually. As I said, my background is doing feasibility studies for large performing arts centers. So I have an idea of what to look for. I'd like to see economic development at the forefront. I want to see our local businesses being incorporated into these projects, either as vendors or getting contracts with the city. In terms of funding mechanisms, I think, you know, the state just gave us the full rein of the hot tax, the hotel occupancy tax, which we can use 100% of that money now for that zone, which is important.
But that money is also used for other things like the Guadalupe Cultural Arts Center and mm-hmm. other arts programs throughout San Antonio. People are concerned that Project Marvel is going to become the 800-pound gorilla in San Antonio and just suck up every available dollar and, you know, push out, crowd out everything else.
Well, and we're going to have to make sure that doesn't happen. And that's going to take leadership that prioritizes our existing organizations and makes sure that this project gives more than it takes. It needs to produce high-paying, good jobs for our community. It needs to bolster our small businesses, help grow our small businesses. I like the idea of using a TERS for part of this, just like they did with the Missions Baseball Stadium, where the development creates the tax dollars that come in. So those taxes don't exist without the development. I think that's a really good way of doing it and a smart way of doing it.
The tax increment in that reinvestment
zone. Yes, thank you. I always forget what that acronym stands for. But yeah, I think that's a really smart way to do it. So it doesn't exist if the development doesn't exist, but then we can use those dollars to put back in our community and continue growing that economic base. But in the end, we have to, you know, we have to see solid data. We have to see exact numbers. It can't be a wish or a want. We have to see some pretty serious research and information to base our decisions on.
Well, I am very sorry that Misty Spears decided not to join us. It would have been great to have both of the candidates running for District 9 joining us and being able to take all these fantastic calls, these questions we got from voters and listeners. But we did get to hear from Angie Taylor Aramburu, and she is on the ballot along with Misty Spears running for the District 9. Early voting is now underway. It lasts until June the 3rd. The runoff election day is June the 7th. If you did not vote in the May election, don't worry. You can still vote in the runoff election, and your vote is necessary. Thank you so much, Angie, for being here today.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation. Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.